Hello and welcome to another episode of the Menswear Style Podcast. I'm your host, Pete Brooker, and today I'm talking to the co-founder of Proverbs Skin, Luke Sheriff. Proverbs Skin, their mission is simple: to make amazing, clean, natural and organic products that are better for human health and performance, the planet and its people. Their passion is to help people think, feel and look better so they can make the most out of every day, and together they can give back to the people who need it the most. Their journey has already started with their refillable natural deodorant and hand sanitizer, and now more than ever they need people like you. I'm pointing to the microphone for no reason. People like you to help them have as big an impact as possible. So more information can be found, and obviously all the products and everything that we talk about is over at proverbskin.com. But here to describe Proverbs Skin in his own words is co-founder Luke Sheriff.
The short answer is a natural skincare routine made simple and sustainable. So really, I think on the questions you sent over, probably the place to start is my background and how I got into this and why that tagline is relevant, all the parts of it. So a very brief history in time. Kirsty, the other half of everything, and I met at university. We went to Oxford together. I studied human sciences, which is the studies of humans and their interaction with the environment. Turns out I've spent a lot of time thinking about human health. I then did a master's in epidemiology and infectious disease. So for all those of my friends out there that thought that was a ridiculous waste of time, fairly relevant for the last
in
two
your
years.
Face all those friends from
yeah, exactly. Then I've been together since university, but our paths diverged in that I was lucky enough to play professional rugby at Harlequins and then Nottingham. So I really selfishly continued my journey in health and performance, which is, yeah, a big part of sort of who I am and what gets me up in the morning. Kirsty's passion was beauty, spa. So she set up sort of, 2008, we set up our first skincare brand called Pink's Boutique, which is focused at spas. It's all sourced Asian organic, really lovely handmade stuff. And the reason that exists is because of my experience in fitness and health, where a guy called Phil Richards came along, the guy we're still in contact with. He's trained Eddie Hall recently, really knows his stuff, but was very ahead of his time really in 2006 when we met him, talking about endocrine disruptors, toxins that you can absorb in your skin, things that you should be avoiding if you want peak performance. And Kirsty's eyes lit up when she was like, wait a second, I teach and train people in beauty and I have no idea what's in the product. So that was a eureka moment where she sort of looked at it all and went, this can't be right. People are bathing in this stuff, literally bathing and washing, using it on their skin, especially in spas. So that was her impetus to launch Pink's Boutique and really get into what you should be looking for in a product and a really basic level of like the ingredients, how they perform. I was testing stuff in the showers at rugby at that point. Much jokes about Pink's Boutique, spas, etc. But I think we've come a long way in the last 25 years. And so I've always been interested in that side of it as well, as part of, the morning routine, how many products you might well use in a day. It's quite a lot. I mean, Kirsty's is well over 20. I'm probably over 10, even if you're just looking at shower gel, hair gel, toothpaste, wash, cleanser. I may use a few more than the average, but it's still a fair amount every day. And talking to Phil over the years and just trying to look at the way we impact ourselves and things that you want to do positively for yourself. It's an area with Kirsty's expertise in skincare and my expertise in health that we thought we could bring to a wider audience than just a spa audience with Proverbs. So that's why we wanted to launch that. And that happened in 2017, and then COVID happened. And so we went from being in retail stores to a degree to actually focusing online, which is where we have been for the last year or so, focusing online. And going back to the tagline, the idea is to keep it simple. So for lots of people getting into it, if they have efficiency in mind, if they're looking for performance as quickly as possible, sometimes things get overcomplicated. So we try and break it down to as few steps as possible, which I think for lots of our audience is resonates with them. And then the sustainable side of it is going all the way back to the beginning of my degree in human science and how we interact with our environment. That's on the individual health level, which I'm really passionate about, but it's also linked into how we impact the planet and how that's now coming back to somewhat potentially bite us in the backside. So I think all brands are looking at it, and you certainly see from advertising they are, so that's good. But we want to, Proverbs stands for a statement of truth or honesty. So basically, you know, in packaging, in our business as a whole, wherever we can, we're trying to make steps forward, but it's not perfect. I mean, I don't, anyone that sort of makes out that they've got the perfect sustainable business, I hope they have, but I don't feel, I think there's a lot going on behind that. So we try and be as honest as we can and iterate every chance we get when we produce anything from a new brochure to how it's printed, you know, to the packaging and the products. And that's where we are now, trying to inspire people to make better choices for their health through the products they used to start the day in the right way.
So, Luke, personal question for you.
Yeah.
Do you have a shared bathroom with Kirsty? Or do you have two separate bathrooms?
Pretty much share everything. It's a running joke that she's the other half of everything. So, yes, the one thing that I don't know if it's going to work immediately, but we are, you just mentioned that you were looking to move. We are, for the first time since we moved up to the Midlands, looking to move house. Now the kids are a bit bigger. And her dream is to maintain a shared bathroom, but to have our own sinks. So yes, that will be a life goal for her, I think. Yeah, we definitely share the same space, but if it was big enough for her to have her own rare products and her own.
I think Kirsty and my girlfriend would get on very well, because we're, like you say, we're moving in about a week's time, my girlfriend and I, and she's very excited about having two separate bathrooms. I don't really care about bathrooms, to be honest with you. I mean, I've got a couple of products in the shelf, but, you know, I don't own as much real estate in the bathroom as Anastasia, my girlfriend, does. I am excited about having an office studio at the end of the garden. That's kind of like where my head's at.
Yeah, nice.
She's shopping around for what I can do in my own bathroom and what she can do in her own space, because I feel like a woman in the bathroom, that is, I mean, in the morning especially, that's like 95% of the time where she is glued.
Well, it sums up our morning routine, in case you won't mind me suggesting. We get up at the same time. We get up before the children. We do some exercise. That's a big part of starting the day in the right way. But I get approximately 10 minutes to get ready, and she gets about 50. So yeah. In that 10 minutes, I have to be pretty efficient, which is where we come back to, like, keeping it simple, you know, 2, 3, maybe 4 products, you know, deodorant, body wash, face wash and moisturizer. And I think if you do those consistently morning and night, you get the result that, yeah, certainly I'm looking for. To be fair, there is a lot of makeup and hair that goes into Kirsty's setup, which, as you can see, I don't aspire to just yet, although maybe one day.
Never know.
But while the kids need getting ready, that's my role in all this. So I get it. I think people are looking for different things, but for us, yeah, it's a range of products that you want to use and feel the best when you walk out the door. And for me, I can do that in 10 minutes, which is great. For Kirsty, a lot of the aesthetics and added extras take a bit longer.
The only time that I actually get agitated with my girlfriend is when I can't find my stuff in the bathroom, because I only, like I say, I only have about a couple of bits, and then it's swamped in the whole tubs and containers of lotions and potions and whatnot. And I just say, can I just have like my one thing that I can find at the front? Because that's all I need. Whatever it is, it's just at the front. I mean, I do moisturize it, obviously. Yeah. I think every man has to partake in that procedure. But maybe you can talk about some of the ingredients. You did touch upon it earlier about how there was a eureka moment where we were putting the wrong stuff in, you're using the wrong stuff and the wrong products. And what distinguishes yours with the right products?
Yeah, so I think the simplest view, Kirsty phrases the term bottle turners. Like when she, in 2004, this is going all the way back to then, when she first sort of, you know, started looking at this, and then 2006 more in depth, when you turn a bottle, it was kind of like, I don't understand what's in this. You know, when you look at food ingredients, actually there's probably a large amount of that goes on as well, but you know, for something that you can absorb through your skin, like, it seems odd that a lot of those words seem very scientific and not very clear, and and going through a phase in our life where we were trying to improve our performance and health and looking at the food we ate very clearly and seeing that we wanted to eat organically or naturally where possible, you know, where possible, it became obvious that that wasn't as clear to the consumer. And at that point, we were more than consumers. We were people training people in beauty products. So it was like, what? And it wasn't our brand at this point. It was a number of other brands. It was just the training side of things that we started in. So Casey went back and talked to Phil and we're like, you know, what should we be avoiding? He's like, well, you should be looking for natural derivatives where it's possible, if not organic versions of it. And Kirsty's does a much better version of this now. She's got a little picture with a tree and everything, kind of breaking ingredients down into how they're manufactured and how they're made. And to be clear, it is all about a statement of truth. Just because it is produced, you know, in a certain way, like in a lab, that doesn't mean it's bad necessarily. But it's just for consumers to understand first and foremost. So there is those things that are produced, you know, in a manufacturing facility from a number of components and are essentially not natural. Now, plenty of people will go, well, everything comes from nature and that's fine. I understand that. But what we're looking at is trying to find things that you can find in nature and use as close to that as possible with as little processing as possible. So anything like, you know, salt, sea salt, anything that is natural but not farmed can't be organic. So organic is like the top end, the most expensive to produce. It has to be grown in soil. So the Soil Association, the name gives away, are the people that accredit things as organic in this country, both cosmetics and food. So it has to be grown in the soil, has to be therefore looked after in a certain way. They don't use a whole host of chemicals, obviously. They, you know, very careful about pesticides. And that through them is a way of finding, you know, out that a product is actually the highest standard. But it's very expensive to produce that. The yields are lower. You know, you have to, you know, go through less processing. And so, yeah, you get a very potent ingredient, which is as close as possible to its original format, whether it be cold pressed when you get the oil out of it. And that's kind of the gold standard. But in the middle are natural versions of that. So you could still have a tree, because you use the tree, like an apple tree could be grown in organic soil without any pesticides, with all the standards being met, and you get an apple at the end that's organic. Obviously, an apple is natural, and you could just, that could grow in nature without any of those things. But you wouldn't have necessarily known what had been put on it in terms of like pesticides, everything. And then there's, you know, someone completely generating a fragrance out of a synthetic, you know, nature in a lab. So there's like the individual like sections of ingredients. But for the consumer, that can be really confusing. So going back to the way we were, it's like, if you understand what it says as an ingredient when you turn the bottle around, there's a pretty good chance it's natural or organic. Mm. And that's a good place to start. There's then a whole list of things that over the years have become quite common, like touch points, like parabens, sodium lauryl sulfate, ingredients that have consistently been marked as having bad outcomes if you use too many of them. And so for us, the difficulty is, you know, somebody will show you an ingredient and they'll say, oh, well, I've got a lot of data that says it's safe. And then there'll be other people that say, oh, there's this ingredient and it's terrible for you. Our stance is, if you wouldn't eat it, I wouldn't want to put it on me. And if ultimately it comes from nature and, yeah, there's nothing bad being said about it, then that's a good place to start. So, yeah, it is difficult to put concisely. And so that's one of the things about, in Pinks, we use the Soil Association. So they're a third-party accreditation that say, we believe these are manufactured in a safe way. The shift came in Proverb when we wanted to maintain those standards, but there were other ingredients that the Soil Association, either because they aren't grown or because, you know, their scope of ability to test every product in the market is not there, every ingredient. We then took our knowledge from that, and when we produced Proverb, we went to the next level, which is we want at least natural, if not organic, but it to produce a result, a lab-proven result. And that's where, in anything really, my background is like, you want to be able to measure that result is, why are we using these ingredients? Well, number one, we think they're safe because we've looked at the data on whether they're safe. We want to produce them in a way that's more sustainable, so natural or organic. And then we want to produce a result. And that means either we've tested our ingredients together as a combination, like we have with our moisturizers, to prove that they moisturize, or the individual ingredients that we've chosen come from a place that's done their own independent testing so that we're delivering results, as opposed to being caught somewhere in the middle where you can either be a natural brand, which is can be good, or a natural organic brand, but that's a kind of nice to have, might not demonstrate any results, or you could have synthetic, completely made up ingredient list, which has got some great scientific results about it, but are you 100% confident about putting that on your body? So we're going to try and bridge the gap between the two to find natural, lab-proven ingredients and formulas that deliver results in a safe way.
And they're made in the UK? The products
all manufactured. Yeah, all manufactured in the UK. That's been very good in the last 2 years. To be honest, we always wanted that to be the case. We're very involved in that side of things, but at the same time, it's been very useful in terms of disruption over the last 2 years. That we've been less disruptive than potentially other brands or products being made outside the UK.
How long did it take? So, like, when you had the germ of the idea, to kind of getting prototypes in your hand, visiting, the manufacturer before actually having the final product, launching it on the site, and seeing it out in the flesh.
So it took us 2.5 years, which doesn't sound very quick, but when you bear in mind that we had the background of another brand of product formulation, we'd already done it before once. It didn't feel like it was taking us too long. Obviously, then COVID hit, so it feels like 2022 is actually like a relaunch almost, right, in our own minds. The original branding, ingredient choices, then getting the products tested. Because if you're going to do some of the testing, which we did in terms of the moisturizers, proving that they work, or just basically meeting all the standards to produce a cosmetic, a year would be very quick. So 2.5, it seemed to go quite quickly.
Luke, potentially stupid question, but how can you prove a moisturizer works? What are those tests?
So you send it to an independent lab, and they measure the moisture in someone's skin before they put it on, and then they put the moisturizer on, and then over 2 hour periods, they continue to measure the moisturizing levels of the skin. And they measure that against a base, as in a someone with no moisturizer. And then we actually had it measured against a competitor moisturizer as well, just as a standard. And then they can sort of measure over those number of hours. Then they give you a measure of how long it lasts and the efficacy of it.
Right. Can it measure like fine lines and wrinkles and stuff like that?
That's a separate thing. So there's a, I mean, it's an expensive process, and it can be a long process, but you can do a number of things that you can do that. So some of the ingredients we have been tested for fine lines, and they do, like, they, as you imagine, or they take a photo under like a really high resolution photo, and then they'll use the product regularly for a week or 2 weeks, then they'll take another photo at the end and compare them. And we just had the moisturization done for the whole product, as in all the ingredients put together, but we have data for the individual ingredients within some of our products that demonstrate those efficacy. For the one that makes me laugh is the deodorant one, which is, if you want a deodorant tested, we were like, how do they do that? And we spoke to the lab that do all these tests, and they're like, well, we send it to Paris and they get some people to put it on, and then they get them to like stand around in the lab all day, and then somebody goes and smells their armpits at the end of it.
Are you telling me that you don't have a guy on a desert island spray his armpits, and then a horde of women in loincloths come swarming around?
Not unless you're links Africa, but some of it's a little bit more sort of touchy feely, but most of it is done with more objective measurements.
Right, okay, that's interesting. Well, you mentioned deodorant there, but I know that there is you crowdfunded one of deodorant products, so can you just talk about what makes your deodorant different as well?
So this is back in 2019 July. It was a bit before that. I was seeing around, this is sort of a journey. As I said, I think a lot of brands have gone on, but we were looking at launching a deodorant, and the packaging was really starting to bug me at that point. If you told me at the beginning of all of this that packaging would be the biggest challenge, I would have been surprised. But yeah, with wanting to produce it in a sustainable way or educate the consumer about how to use it, there are some limitations. There are very few perfect solutions, as I said. But I just sat there and thought, I can't get my head around how we do this in a way that, yeah, it just isn't putting unnecessary packaging in the world. And obviously, yeah, we had the original product range, and as I said, we've iterated that. We've just launched our moisturizers in glass, which is much more readily recycled than plastic. Reloads, as they're called, come without a pump on, so that the bit that's the least recycled can sort of be kept and reused. But that came off the back of this project in 2019 with deodorant, where we knew our audience would buy into a brand more easily. They'd use a product like that, and we wanted it to be a top quality product. Here it is.
Okay.
But, and I'll explain that in a second, but it sort of led us to think, how could it be done better? And refilling what you already have seems to make sense. Reducing single-use plastic. That, and then the deodorant world, and this isn't very useful because I know that you can see me, but the people listening probably can't.
The podcast, Luke's going to show us the deodorant up to the camera.
It's what's called a solid-state deodorant. So you imagine a candle, basically, which screws out of a case.
Yeah, yeah. Like a big lipstick. That,
yeah, very good. When that comes to the end, instead of discarding the case, we just send you a solid-state refill wrapped in paper,
gotcha,
which is compostable, and then you just screw that back in your case. And that way, hopefully, that case can last a very long time.
And this hasn't been done before, right?
Well, people in the US have done it, and there are brands that have done it since. But when we crowdfunded it in 2019, we were the first people. We also raised £10,000 for WaterAid through doing it. We didn't want the crowdfunding itself to do anything other than help us launch the product and do some good.
Yeah.
So they were very kind of partnered with us. So that had a double win in that case, and we got the product to the ground and launched it in officially just January 2020. So that was the official first one in the UK, which there's been a couple since. There's a few different mechanisms for doing it. We like the size of ours. We like the feel of ours. The three levels of strength is something that's unique. So there's formulations for people that are transferring over from, say, an aerosol or an antiperspirant. So the thing to remember is deodorants are about reducing the bacteria that produce the smell. They don't stop the sweat.
Yeah.
Whereas an antiperspirant will block up the pores, again, not something we feel is very natural, and stop the sweat, which in turn stops some of the smell. So yeah, they're natural, which some of the other competitors are, but we have three levels. So we have one for people that we call the active level, or they're coming from an aerosol deodorant, so they're waiting and expecting a higher or a different level of efficacy. So just when you move over from a non-natural deodorant, there could be a period where your body adapts and the product you use is what comes out your pores, and you do have to wait. So we explain this in all our packaging. So, but for someone like that and someone that's very active all day, we would use that strength. Then there's a core strength, which has one less ingredient in bicarbonate of soda, which we take out because some people can be allergic to that. So that's another really high efficacy product, but just with a slight variation, knowing that people have different skins. And then we have a sensitive one for people, again, that don't react well to fragrance, even though our fragrances are essential oils. Some people don't react well, so then there's a sensitive and non-fragrant one. So they can really pick what works best for their lifestyle. Some people have both or a couple of different strengths depending on what they're doing in the day. So that's good as well. But they're vegan, plant-based. We've had hundreds of positive reviews, and the efficacy has been really well received. So yeah, for people that are looking to look for natural products because they're concerned about what they're putting on their product, on themselves, but they also want the results, that's all. So it goes back to the core of the brand, which is taking stuff that's natural and safe and producing a result, then the deodorant's a really good start. It's obviously a product that a lot more people use. I think the penetration of deodorant in the market, when I was talking to some of my friends, In market research, is like 92%. So that's pretty high for a product. Although they made me laugh because on the data that they had, toilet roll was only 98%. So
slight disparity.
Statistics can all
conceal the truth.
Look. Yeah. Whereas skincare is more like 60%. So
I had a question, and I have thought about this for a long time about antiperspirant. So you mentioned it there about how you feel like the body should naturally sweat. It's kind of what the body wants to do, and antiperspirant is almost like that fighting your body. Is there any like experience that you've come across with some of the research that kind of alludes, you know, that affirms that theory that antiperspirant isn't really the future for us?
There's an infographic on one of the cancer awareness websites which talks about aluminium, which is in a lot of antiperspirants, as being something to avoid. So again, like I said in the discussion about ingredients, we're always very careful not to say this causes this, and you know, you just go along and try and find as much evidence as you can. But something like that, that's therefore, you know, going into a pore and potentially going into your bloodstream, which is known to have had some unfortunate side effects for some people. It just seems, to go back to the core of what we do, which is not wanting to put unnecessary things on our body that, that might be harmful. And although the result, as you say, is fairly effective, like if you block up the pore and, kill the bacteria at the same time, you've got a pretty good chance of not smelling or sweating. I don't do it for obvious reasons. And I think more and more people are conscious that, going against, the whole wellness industry is kind of fascinating to me, and we could get massively sidetracked by my feelings towards wellness. Like, it's a massive industry, and hopefully people are getting the benefit they want out of it. But the idea is to make people feel better, right? Make people feel happier and get in touch with their mindfulness. And a lot of the things that people develop to create those, in my mind, can add more stress to someone's life. So stressing your body unnecessarily never seems like a good idea. So that's why I avoid doing things to it that it doesn't want to do.
Do you find people have more of a reaction to, and it's a bit of a loaded question, because I actually can't use roll-on deodorants because it kind of leaves me a little bit irritated.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm like in a minority with this. I've not done any field research. Yeah. But do you find that... that is common amongst guys or not common at all?
In general, armpits can be quite sensitive. It is one of those things that, like Kirsty used the word semi-occlusive, which essentially you're trapping in the product and it's hot, and there's other things like bacteria going on in there. So and you rub them. So they can be more sensitive, a particularly sensitive area of the body. So we find that's why we have the sensitive one in the range, because we knew that was a potential problem for people. I don't know whether Kirsty's experience is just earwigging over here. I don't know whether Kirsty's experience of shaving armpits makes it worse. But that is an irritation. So I don't know whether more men are shaving their armpits these days. Swimmers, friends of mine, shave their legs. So, there's the friction.
Well, I've been looking to get into a product that will actually help me along that road, because I'm also sick of buying aerosols and stuff when I go abroad and traveling and stuff, and then having to pack all that.
We'll definitely put one in the post for you.
Well, that's very sweet, but I'll
call it a housewarming present.
Well, listen,
you'll be sweating plenty when you're moving house.
I'll be thinking of you guys when I will sweat. And the products look great, by the way, and proverbskin.com is a place people can have a look and do some shopping themselves. And is it just online for now? Have you got any plans for bricks and mortar, any boutiques?
Well, one of the questions you sent over was what's the plan for 2022? So having been locked in and having been focused on the online for the last 18 months, we're quite excited that this year is going to be a year where we get out some physical places. And for us, they're going to be very focused on finding the places where our customers are, and for the large part, that's been people that have, like I said, taken that next step to thinking about their health, and what they potentially eat, how they exercise. It's all part of the journey. And then what am I putting on myself? And so the places we're looking at are gyms and spas. So looking for gym and spa partners. We've got a treatment, you can see behind me, there's a treatment bed. Kirsty's in fact going to Dubai in about 2 weeks' time to launch in Atlantis, Caesar's Palace, some of the really lovely places over there with the treatment protocols. So we're positioned, almost coming full circle to our original brand Pinks, where we're taking treatments to places where we're linking the gym and the spa, treatments that you can do in this gym, which, you know, links people through so they get an understanding that treatment protocols aren't necessarily just about lying around and relaxing. They're about performance, which is what my experience in massage has been over the years. And therefore get a taste and feel for the product. Therapists and PTs and people are fantastic at educating people. So it's really a chance to have them as ambassadors talking about, like I said, like the ingredient choices, the efficacy, how it fits into a morning routine, a chance for people to see the product physically. And that's, yeah, that's what we're looking forward to this year. Because I think when you've got a product that is kind of the next level in lots of ways, it sometimes needs a bit more explaining. So while we might have a tagline and we're passionate about what we do, sometimes if you're new to a brand or a new to a concept, seeing it in the flesh and talking to someone about it has a real, real impact, which lasts. So we're really excited about that plan for the rest of the year. And so I say rest of the decade probably, but that's where we're kicking off this year, making a bit of an inroad into those physical spaces that you get a little bit more education, a little bit more feel for the brand and some of the performance that comes along with good therapists and good treatments.
Awesome. Well, best of luck and continued success both to you and Kirsty in the background. Thanks for dropping in some nuggets there in the background. And again, proverbskin.com. We'll put all the links over on the show notes over at Menswear Style. And I had a rugby question. Sorry.
Oh gosh, that's probably, I'll probably least likely to answer that one.
Before I let you go, Luke, I have to ask this question. I've always found it curious with rugby versus football or soccer, as the Americans would call it, how there seems to be, like, the fans are always well behaved in rugby grounds compared, well, it's a contact sport, rugby, a lot more than football. And it seems like the fans are a lot more just there to see the game and enjoy it. And you don't hear about any rucks that happen in car parks. Maybe there is, but it just doesn't make the column inches in the papers. Yeah, football, you know, it does seem to have a bit more of a tarred brush.
So I can talk because I've thought a lot about this, about the on the pitch experience. And I don't know whether this correlates to what goes on off the pitch, but I recently started playing touch rugby. And what you very quickly realize is that in a sport like rugby that's contact, you never have to leave anything on the pitch. Like if somebody irritates you or, you know, you get, you know, a bad call by the referee or whatever, you can physically go and make an impact. You can go and, you know, the next time the person that annoyed you gets the ball, you can tackle them. Right. Or, you know, you can take the ball and run as hard as you can in someone. There's a real release of frustration and real sort of ability to physically manipulate the game, which gets a lot of the tension out. And there's this really sort of weird thing that goes on where even in training with your own mates, you can like get in a fight. And then by the time you walk off the pitch and having lunch, you're laughing about it. And that's the same with the opposition. So, you know, like in some of the most heated battles on the rugby pitch, there's this respect that's built up. There's an ability to express it physically, which, in my experience, is really good and healthy. And then you come off and 99 times out of 100, you're laughing about it. Even if you've lost, you kind of physically know you've given your all.
Yeah.
And my experience of touch rugby, which overlaps to football, is where you can't get that physical nature out. You know, it's very like irritating, basically. You know, if someone like says they've touched you and they haven't, it's a flashpoint, but you can't do anything about it. If someone keeps tripping up as a footballer and keeps like, you know, like niggling you, but all you can really do is dribble past them.
Yeah.
You know, the best you can do is go and score a goal and shout in their face, but like, It's a pent up frustration. I really think it's a pent up frustration, and I don't know whether that translates into how the fans experience it when they watch it. But like you watch England play Scotland at the weekend, and yeah, people are gutted that England lost, but you just see the physical endeavour that went into it, and they're exhausted on the pitch. And you can look at the odd decision there or the odd decision here, but you can't question that their effort. You can't go, my God, they didn't try hard enough. There's people coming up bleeding. You know, people are really throwing their all into it. Whereas I think part of the frustration in football is it just they come off the pitch and they haven't had the ability to physically express themselves. While they may have run 10 kilometres and played really hard. And I think that's why the England team in the last 2 or 3 years have managed in football to like look like they're giving 100% all the time. And I think fans respond to that if you don't get the results. And my only advice to a football team is if you want your fans to behave better, then come off like you've really put in a shift. And whether they see that or not, hopefully you'll feel better about it as well. But it must be very frustrating if you're Ronaldo, who gets tripped up every week, you know, to not be able to turn around and do anything about it. Whereas in rugby, you get that outlet in a controlled, should I say, legal environment.
That's a good theory. I guess also on the pitch, the soccer players, I don't want to call them soccer players, but just for our American audience, but our football players can just shout at linesmen, shout at referees and kind of have that. That's the only way they can, it's like.
Well, exactly. And then that probably does translate. That probably does translate into the crowd, right? Because they shout at the referee.
They then get venomous. Back. They then get riled up. But in cricket, you don't have... I mean, you can get a warning even if you just look wrong at the referee. I mean, cricket's great. And then you don't hear about any rucks happening in the car park of Trent Bridge or anything like that.
Anyone that can spend 12 hours in a day doing the same thing must have more patience than me, because I quit cricket at the age of about 12 and I was just like, I cannot spend my day standing still. So maybe it lends itself to a more relaxed personality. Plus the crowd are there having a beer, sitting in the sun generally. It's slightly different.
Well, this is why I'm trying to get my girlfriend to go to a cricket game. Because she's like, it looks boring. It's like, you're kidding me. It's the best. I mean, it's almost like going for a picnic, but you've just got a couple of things happening in the foreground here.
Well, if you want to ease her in, take her to Kew Green, to the St. Margaret's Church, where they do afternoon tea on a Sunday. And watch some village cricket. There we go. That's my tip for you.
That is on that doorstep. So
yeah, exactly. Ease her into how relaxing it is, and as long as she keeps an eye out for the odd six that heads your way.
It's always my dream to catch one of those and kind of.
Oh, there's some amazing clips. Yeah, amazing clips on YouTube of like crowd members with a beer in one hand.
Those are my favourite. Holding the beer in one hand and kind of not even looking when the ball comes into the palm of their arm.
Live off that for the rest of their life.
Absolutely, Luke. Really enjoyed talking to you. Again, take care of yourself and all the best with the brand for the future. And I hope to speak to you soon.
Thanks ever so much for having us.
You've been listening to the Menswear Style podcast. Be sure to head over to menswearstyle.co.uk for more menswear content and email info@menswearstyle.co.uk if you'd like to be a future guest on the show. Finally, please help support the show by leaving a review on iTunes or wherever you're listening to this podcast. Until next time.